Labyrinths is brought to you by Knox Robinson Productions. Please consider becoming a patron. For as little as $5 a month, you can listen to Labyrinths ad-free.
Visit patreon.com/KnoxRobinson to learn more. Welcome to Who's Right?
It's me.
And it's me. So today we're talking about Valentine's Day.
L'amour.
Is it good or is it whack?
What kind of Grinch would say that Valentine's Day is whack?
Well, it's just a holiday invented by the Hallmark Corporation in order to sell chocolates and gift cards.
Yeah, the lizard people are totally on top of that.
But more broadly, I think we want to talk about love and all the things that you think about on Valentine's Day. So this is going to be a far-ranging conversation.
Yeah, I don't think we quite have a vision for it yet. What I will say, sort of now going against my previous notion, which was to defend Valentine's Day to the death, would be to acknowledge that there is a kind of weird pressure that Valentine's Day puts on people to express their love for someone in a very particular way.
And it can be artificial.
And it can feel very superficial, artificial.
Well, perhaps we should explain that today we're recording this on February 13th, the day before Valentine's Day. You're hearing it probably on Valentine's Day. Today is our loveversary. That is the anniversary of the day I dropped the L-bomb.
And notably, it is not the day tomorrow, which is today for you.
And
which
the
is
reason that's the case is because early in our courtship, things were progressing.
Swimmingly.
Yes. I could feel the emotions building. It was that point in our dating life when I could feel that urge rising. This was not my first rodeo. I'd been in a number of relationships. I'd been in love plenty of times. I knew the feeling that I was falling in love. Mm-hmm. And it felt like it was going to happen soon.
Right. It's not like you could like hold it in.
Yeah.
You know.
And Amanda was working at this little antiquarian bookstore. And they were throwing a party. I think it was a Valentine's Day party.
It was a Valentine's Day party. It was just honestly, an excuse to get people into an antiquarian bookstore.
Yeah.
So we threw parties.
Was it part of the first Thursday?
I think it was.
Art walk?
Yeah.
And I was helping set up for the party and hanging out at the bookstore/gallery and, dancing and so forth. And we went back to Amanda's place that night. And sometime around, 10 or 11 p.m., we're laying in bed. And I knew this was coming soon, and I just could not bear to say I love you for the first time on Valentine's Day.
So very anti-Valentine's Day of you.
Well, it would ruin it. It would somehow make it seem, the whole artificial lens, the expectation, it would sap it of its power.
It was almost like you felt like obligated to say it on Valentine's Day and then it wasn't as real.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's so fascinating. It kind of means that the only day that you can't say I love you for the first time is Valentine's Day.
Yeah, totally. And so I said it that night because the alternative was like waiting at least until the day after Valentine's Day, but probably you'd want to wait even a little bit more.
Yeah.
And it, I didn't choose it to happen then. The gods did.
Yeah, that's a fascinating point. That's a fun. So anyway, so today, as in yesterday for all of you, is our loveversary. We have lots of versaries. And we are celebrating it, I guess. You got me flowers. You bought me a nice book.
Yeah.
And I have done nothing.
Well, you did give me a nice I told you so earlier. So.
Yeah, I've been horrible this time around.
Different who's right.
Sorry. It was a rough night last night. The kids were not sleeping at all.
So, there's various reasons I don't like Valentine's Day. it's hard to get a restaurant reservation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the expectation.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who are not in relationships or who are not in love who often feel left out. That's a common complaint.
I don't think it's left out. I think that's the lesser form of the argument. I think they're feeling weird pressure from all sides. Mm. Like people feel like they can suddenly give them a hard time about, or like make them feel bad. Like, you know, your friend might be like, oh, you don't have a date for Valentine's Day. Oh, how sad. And they're like, or not. Like,
yeah.
So I hear all those complaints.
Yeah.
At the same time,
love
though,
is great.
Love is great. And yeah. I love love. And isn't it fun to have an excuse to just like have a little extra just heart-shaped love, like heart-shaped emotion in your life just because it happens to be a day? Like I loved Valentine's Day growing up. And
you were probably one of the kids in grade school who got all the Valentines.
You know, you'd be surprised. I don't think I was the primary object of people's affection. Maybe I have a skewed memory of this. I know I was a cute kid.
But you weren't one of the kids who didn't get very many and felt, aw.
I mean, the most memorable love note that I ever received was in third grade, and it was not on Valentine's Day.
Wait, can we talk about this for a second? What did that
sure.
love note say?
Okay, so the love note was delivered to me on the big toy by the kid who liked me.
Mm-hmm.
It was in a ring box, like,
okay.
Engagement ring box, but it wasn't a ring. It was a folded up note with my name on it. And a gecko keychain.
Okay.
So the gecko keychain was a little gift.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was this note. And
wait, hold on. How thrilled were you at this gecko keychain?
I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It was a good gift.
Yeah. Okay. Third grader. And like he read he read you well.
Geckos, yes. And the note was so perfect that to this day, I still have this note. The kid who had a crush on me wrote in the note, "Dear Amanda, I like you." And he just like dramatized his hesitation, his butterflies
yeah.
in the I thing.
It's a little Monty Python, right? That's what it says.
Exactly. Right? And I was just so charmed by it. I'm to this day charmed by that.
Wait, how did you respond?
I think I was his girlfriend, whatever that means. And
I never really got that whole grade school thing because I didn't really get what love was. And I don't think you really did either.
I knew what a crush felt like, though. I've been having crushes since I was 5 years old. Like, I had a crush on the kid who gave me a Ninja Turtle hat in kindergarten. But sorry, not even kindergarten, daycare. There's a kid who...
I don't think I had crushes at that age.
100% had a crush on me in daycare. And, like, he sort of singled me out as, like, the one that he liked. I think his name was Ricky, maybe? And he gave me a Ninja Turtle hat.
I think we should shift this to talking about
and turtles.
It's noted for next Valentine's Day. Here you go, an iguana. Happy Valentine's Day. The traditional iguana.
Just reptiles. Nothing says love like reptiles.
Yes, cold-blooded. The way to a woman's heart is by making her snort, if you weren't aware of that. I want to talk about love at first sight.
Okay.
Because.
Have we talked about this on how like that has impacted us?
Well, I want to talk about that. I also want to spend a minute talking about you and Raffaele because.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you were in you are piccioncini, as they say, right?
Piccioncini.
You are lovebirds, and it was one of those scenarios where you meet somebody and you click instantly, and all of a sudden you're overwhelmed by the feelings. And the context and the circumstances are surely a part of it.
Definitely a part of it.
But would you describe that as like a, does love at first sight capture what that was like in those early days or not?
I think that it's, So yes, in the sense that it really was an on-site kind of thing. But that's also due to the circumstances where...
And by sight, just to clarify, I'm not, you know, I don't mean like...
I wasn't like in love with him like the moment he walked into the room.
Yeah, I mean after
but
like
you
casual...
make eyes across
but
from
even,
the room.
I'm counting casual interactions, mm-hmm. you know. You can have talked to them.
Okay. Well, in that case, I think our experience is more what you would think of as a love at first sight. With Raffaele, it was like crush at first sight. It was like, because it was so hard to talk to each other.
Right.
Like his English was not very good. My Italian was not very good, but he was very nice and very, very chivalrous towards me, which was so refreshing in a college environment.
And in Italy.
And in Italy, particularly.
Being leered at and catcalled, yeah.
So with Raffaele, I would say we immediately were drawn to each other.
Is it more of an infatuation?
No, I wouldn't say that, because that sort of suggests that you're like writing their name on your notebook over and over and over again. And it wasn't like that. It was more like he was a breath of fresh air. Like when I met him, I just was like, oh, this is nice.
Someone nice.
I yeah. really like this person.
That's not what you felt when you met me.
No. you had a lot going against you, my dear sir. One of which was the fact that I was engaged to a completely other person when I first met you. And
that's just how good I am.
And you were smoking at
I
the time.
I was smoking.
Gross.
It's true.
So
I wasn't
gross.
Really a smoker, but I did smoke that
you
one night.
You smoked that night in
yeah,
front of me.
It's true.
And you had a girlfriend, mm-hmm. so, you know...
I mean, neither of us were looking.
Neither of us were looking at all. And yet, in spite of that, and, you know, the whole scenario was that I was interviewing you for the newspaper mm-hmm. about being an author, and we hung out and... you know, had a chance to talk about Star Trek and talk about your book and talk, you know, drink a little bit of scotch, whatever. Like it was very, we're talking about this, these two artists talking to each other about art. And there was nothing romantic about the scenario. Whereas like with Raffaele, I was at a classical music concert and, you know, like...
In the beautiful green heart of Umbria.
Yes, like it's Italy. And it's like, come on. It's just vibrating with romance itself. Our encounter was not a romantic encounter at all. And you had a lot of things, a little tick marks that were against you.
Keep saying a lot.
Well, I mean, I
had a girlfriend and I was smoking in front of you that night. Was there anything else?
Smoking in front of me was like 10 ticks.
Okay, well.
This is so gross.
A big tick.
Big tick for me. Not to yuck anyone's yum, but like I just do not like smoking cigarettes. I saw too much of that in prison. It's just so gross to me. So, but despite myself, I walked away that night being like, huh, I could totally love that person. Like, and it wasn't like, oh my God, now I'm in love with that person. I just thought, wow, in another life, like that person would have been my person. Like, he would have been the one.
Hypothetical love at first sight.
Yeah. Hmm. But it was like my body knew before my brain did, and my brain was just sort of processing the information slowly and in denial.
Hmm.
And I feel like that's an interesting example of love at first sight that seems really real to me. Like, my impulse is to think that love is something that develops with time and familiarity and above all with trust.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I had no reason to trust you. I had no reason to be attracted to you. I had my own thing going on.
Stunning good looks. Big gold chains I was wearing.
Yeah, your weird big gold chains.
Like, and stripes in my beard.
And stripes in your beard. And I don't know, there was just something about you where I was like, wow, he could totally be my person in another life, because I was not thinking that. That was not where my mind was going as something that I needed in my life at that point. So
I also have a fairly unromantic idea of how love works, which is to say, I've been in love many times, and I've found it, like your description, to be something that builds up over time. It's based on trust. There's the kind of... I believe there's a term for this, that how like romantic love shifts gears into what I forget what it's called, the kind of like habitual relationship love, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're not like all a flutter about somebody.
You're not just like fantasizing about taking their clothes off all the time.
And not even that, but just like of hanging out with them, right? Mm. But you don't have butterflies and seeing them. There's a whole period of love that feels that way.
Right.
And then it shifts into something deeper and I think richer, that is the stuff of long relationships.
Right.
And
can you imagine having butterflies in your stomach your entire life?
Wouldn't want that.
No.
Yeah.
Be anxiety inducing.
But you know, I had been in prior relationships where I was in love and I was prepared to spend the rest of my life with those women.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think those were valid loves and could have made viable lifelong partnerships. And they didn't work out for various reasons, mostly on the other side. But in both, you know, in those earlier cases, like, my view was, look, no pairing is perfect, but there is some threshold of good enough that you can cross. And if you've got the right sort of feedback mechanisms in place that will improve your union and your relationship over time, then you can sort of make a good projection into the future that however good we are now with our faults and our flaws and how we relate as a couple, I can see it getting better and better and better.
Mm-hmm.
Then let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just make the choice and like get married or be together, right? That was my attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I thought about those prior relationships. And it's a very clinical, technical way of talking about love. It's not very butterfly-y.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very, you know, staring up at the moon, right? And yet, when we met, it didn't take us very long.
No.
Right? We were kind of...
We first met and then...
We spent some time apart because I was traveling and some other things.
Right.
When we
started dating.
When we actually started dating, it was like a couple weeks until we were like, I want to spend all my time with this person.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was a few months later that we moved in together. We were...
Yeah, we kind of did what friends of ours might call the lesbian route.
Yeah.
We were lesbians for each other.
Showed up with the U-Haul on the second date, you know? And I don't know what you call that. It wasn't the long thing built on trust, right? Is that there's a version of...
Well, we knew... We sort of kind of were getting to know each other as friends for 9 months before we started dating. So,
tattoos might be a really interesting analogy here.
Mm.
I've often thought, especially in my youth, that like, oh, you should really think long and hard about the tattoo you're going to get. You should be certain because it's going to be on your body forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I have tattoos that arrived on my body through that route. Mm-hmm. I thought for a year or more, mm-hmm. you know, before I did it. And then there are other tattoos I have where I was just like, no, this feels right. I'm doing it.
So here's what, I actually have a theory about this, that we say to really think long and hard about a tattoo because typically the first time somebody gets a tattoo is when they're young and stupid mm-hmm. and they haven't lived enough life to know, to have that sort of intuitive perspective about what is right for them. Mm.
Their intuition points haven't been ratcheted up enough.
Yeah, and they haven't. They just haven't had enough life experience with themselves to know what is right for them. Whereas as you've lived your life, once you get to a certain age, you just know what feels right to you or not. You've had the experience of choosing things that are bad and choosing things that are good. And now you know.
And even if you can't analytically pick it all apart and explain why, if you've been in a dozen other relationships and if you've felt those butterfly feelings before and if you've seen the warning signs of how things went wrong and turned sour a dozen times before.
And you know your own faults as a partner and what will make
you incompatible with a person.
Yeah.
Then what you're suggesting is that really love at first sight is for old people.
Yes. Like I'm talking old folks home.
Like they know.
Getting it on. The most romantic place on earth is an old folks home.
Yeah.
That's where love at first sight is happening.
Is like most possible or makes the most sense. Or not necessarily old folks home, but like people who've been around the block.
Yeah. People who've been around the block. Like they know if something is about, if a train of love is about to smack him in the face and they're going to jump right on the tracks.
Is that feeling, you know, I suppose the feeling is sometimes not a good guide to a sustainable relationship, but your hope is that as time goes on, those two things align. And when you get that feeling later in life, it's more likely to actually pan out.
Mm. Hey, what about the question of does love last? Because I think some people might argue that novelty is an important part of romance. And even if you are in a committed monogamous relationship your entire life, you need to infuse that relationship with novelty in order for it to last. Does that seem right to you?
Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning in. This podcast can only exist thanks to listener support. So please consider becoming a patron. Visit patreon.com/KnoxRobinson. I think that novelty probably plays a bigger role in sexual love, sexual attraction. I think people also vary on their the degree to which novelty motivates them in the population. It's a trait you can measure and track. I think it's probably heritable to some degree. That said, I'm not convinced that novelty is hugely important for sustaining love. I think that when love fades away or disappears, a couple things are happening. One is an expectation mismatch, that everything in life goes in waves, and that you shouldn't really expect anything to be constant. So you shouldn't expect that you're going to have those six-pack abs and be perfectly in shape every day of your life. You're not. And even if you are at one point, another point you're not going to be. And of course, on the long, you know, if you're talking about your body, eventually it deteriorates into dust. But, you know, the same is going to be true of your career successes and your relationship with your sister, whatever. Like, those things are going to fluctuate. You should expect them to fluctuate. And if you find yourself in a sort of trough where you feel distant from your partner, one way of looking at that is that you've fallen out of love. And a sort of broader, bigger picture perspective is that you're in a little fluctuation where you're distant from each other right now, and your energies are more inward focused or more focused towards other relationships in your life, and that's okay. that if you tell yourself that that's not okay, then you end up concluding that, oh, love has been lost, right? So that's one thing. And the other thing I think that happens is that people inevitably change. Everyone changes. We're all changing all the time. And if people aren't good communicators with in relationships, then the ways, and if they're not good self-noticers and noticers for each other, then the ways in which they're changing go unremarked upon, unnoticed and unspoken of. And when you and your partner are both changing and you're not taking stock of how you're changing, you're not able to guide your own changing in relation to each other. And so if you might wake up one day and realize that you have totally different interests. You're not the same people you were when you were 20 or 30 or whatever it was. Of course you're not, but you ended up changing in ways that make you no longer compatible. And that leads people, that leads love to fade away, leads to divorces and so forth. The alternative to that is being very aware and communicative. And as you're changing, and this is, by the way, I don't think this is a guarantee that you won't fall out of love or that you will be together always, but it gives you another opportunity as you're changing to attempt to grow together and attempt to, because we always have, do I take the fork in the road left or right? You know, those situations crop up endlessly. And sometimes you're sort of neutral on them. But if you think and realize, oh, this particular choice isn't hugely important to me, but I realize it's far more likely to keep me closer to my partner if I choose path A than path B.
If I suddenly become a Super Bowl fan, are you going to go to the Super Bowl with me?
Don't become a Super Bowl fan. Thoughts?
Yeah, no, that squares with what I think.
Your question was, does love...
I think you're
last,
right. That,
does it get lost?
Well, is novelty an important part of love? And I think you're right that novelty probably is most relevant to the sexual part of a person's relationship. Because I do think there is some validity to the idea of, like, you're so in a rhythm that you, and it's not, there's a reason why you get into a rhythm, because you have a favorite position, or you, like, it's just, you don't have a ton of energy. Like, you, like, there's a lot of work that goes into being a good sexual partner. And if you find something that works and you just sort of, like, get in that groove, it's really hard to hop out of that groove. But then that can
say
become
the same,
like, a
thing about
trench.
What you're culinary life is like when you know how to make certain meals that hit your culinary buttons in the right way, especially when your life is busy or you have kids, or it's like, let's just make this meal that we know how to make,
except,
and it's good.
Except that you can also go to restaurants and get inspired by diverse foods. You can't go to the restaurant au l'amour.
Well, I mean,
unless you're in an open marriage.
Yeah. We're not having that conversation right now. But, you know, our go-to meal is probably, like, when we're feeling uninspired, it's like, let's have nachos.
Yeah. You know? We make really good nachos.
We make really good nachos. We know how to make them gourmet and delicious, and let's do it, right? Mm-hmm. But that, in that moment, we're not really catering toward whatever our desires for novelty are, right?
I was saying that it's easy to get novelty in colon. It was a bad analogy. Yeah. That's what I was saying. What about, I've always found it fascinating when people were attracted to people they didn't like, which is so difficult for me to empathize with, because I feel like I tend to find people I like attractive. Like, I like them as a person before I find them attractive.
This might just be a thing, how much you're visually motivated. I mean, if you're talking about just, like, sexual attraction.
Yeah,
right?
I'm talking about sexual attraction. Yeah. Like, I can notice that a person's, you know, handsome or pretty or
what,
whatever.
What about if they're really, really confident and kind of, you know...
If they're an asshole and they're confident and I don't like them, I do not give a shit.
I think the more interesting question is, how is it possible to love somebody but not like them? And I think, do you know what that's like?
Yes.
You want to talk about that?
I mean, I think this isn't just limited to romantic partners. I think this is a,
I was thinking
a big
you were
thing
gonna
with
go there.
Family.
Yeah.
Or like friends even, because friendships are similar to all these kinds of things where friends can grow apart if you don't grow as a couple in terms of friendships. Like you might get different interests and you might fall out of friendship love with a person. And that's okay too, I guess. It's kind of sad when it comes about in that same way that love falling out of love happens in relationships where you just kind of weren't paying attention or you weren't solving a problem that you knew was there. There was like a white elephant in the room of your friendship and you didn't confront it. And then it became the thing that pushed you apart. So yes, I know what all of those experiences feel like.
But why, when you actively like dislike someone, don't like their company or whatever, like how can love still exist in that environment?
I mean, I think that's a product of your shared history, your familiarity with each other, your...
Are you just deluding yourself though? Are you just loving the person they used to be or loving the relationship you used to have?
But also, yes, in the sense that, like, it doesn't just go away, that love that you had, and which also is a thing that you sort of always continue to hope for. Like, if you had that love and you had that friendship and you had that relationship, you could still have it. Like, there's nothing stopping you.
I mean, it's maybe to bring it back to what I was saying earlier, it's the hope that you're in a trough in your fluctuation.
Right, exactly.
And not that it's a permanent trail off.
Right. But it is wildly disconcerting. I mean, we're human beings, our relationships are a part of our identities. It matters so much. And to have really fundamental relationships get called into question that way, like to find yourself all of a sudden to wake up one day and realize that you don't like someone who means so much to you, that's like wildly disconcerting. And it makes you, it puts me into a sense of existential dread where I feel like I don't even trust myself anymore.
I think maybe we should close out this Who's Right by talking about self-love. And I'm not talking about onanism.
You're not talking about masturbation.
Yeah. I was using the fancy, rare word for it. Yeah.
Well, I try to be down in the mud with the rest of the cretins.
So, cretins, what are your thoughts on this?
Self-love. I think it's important. Am I going to buy myself a box of chocolates?
My position is that it sucks.
No, I don't know.
Does it come easily to you? Is there a danger to it? When does it tip over into arrogance or narcissism?
Well, the thing that I, whenever I, the worry that I have with the idea of self-love is when it's used as an excuse to be abusive towards other people. Like, I'm not being mean to you. I'm just being considerate of myself and my feelings. And my feelings are that you're an asshole or whatever. Like that, there's this, I feel like there's a troubling tendency in the self-love trend even, where protecting yourself means becoming defensive or even aggressive towards other people as a way of exhibiting, as a way of expressing self-love. And that's not my bag, baby. Like love is embracing. It's not a pushing away of others. So I mean, if your self-love means like drawing a line in the sand about who's a good guy and who's a bad guy, and I don't know, like,
does it feel the same as love for the other?
I don't have butterflies in my stomach about myself.
Well,
so,
do you have butterflies about me right now, today?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. Yeah, you still make me get butterflies.
Yeah?
Yeah. You haven't been married that long.
It's this shirt I'm wearing with the cat on it, isn't it?
No, it's a way that you look at me sometimes. That makes me feel a little bit like I'm a prey animal, which, but also that you're gonna, it's more like you're like a tiger that wants to hug me.
Okay. You never look at yourself that way? Have you ever been like just so pleased with yourself? Just like,
I have very, very rarely.
Is that the equivalent?
Have I had the thought of being like, you know what? This is the shit, me. But it's been so rare. Like, is there a moment that I've always felt or that I've realized like, oh, that's why people have a crush. Like, this is why Chris loves me. Or, I've had moments like that before.
But aside from the butterfly question, I think the one that's probably more likely might make more sense in the self-love context is the long-term, you know, platonic devotional love of a marriage, say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have you ever thought to yourself, or even if it's not a conscious thought, like, is it true? Like, I would do anything for you, self, you know? Like, the ways that you would talk about what it means to be in long-term love with me, like, does any of that apply to your relationship with yourself?
I have a lot of compassion for myself. And I have to cut myself a lot of slack because I'm sometimes mean to myself. I'm not the nicest partner to myself.
I'm also trying
really hard to be a better partner to myself. But I'm can be an abusive partner to myself. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if myself went to therapy to complain about myself. You know, like that kind of thing. I'd be like, yeah.
And if your self's girlfriends were like, ditch her.
Yeah, I'd be like, I get it.
Girl, she doesn't care about you.
She does. Like, I don't think the girlfriends would be like, she doesn't care about you. They'd just be like, it's just so much work. Like, can't you have like an easier relationship with yourself? Like, ugh, what's so much work?
And she belittles you sometimes.
Yeah, like it's
in front
just
of your friends.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember that time when I did a big mushroom trip and one of the revelations I had, like coming out of it, I said, should I love myself?
Yeah.
Like, it was an open question, and like,
yeah,
I hadn't,
you were not certain
until that point. I guess I should love myself.
Yeah.
And I think it really struck at some deep, vulnerable spot in me where a big part of me didn't love myself and maybe still doesn't. And I don't know what that's about, what deep wound I have. Maybe it's just the wound of parturition from.
I mean, I think like maybe this is all, maybe this is a totally universal experience, but we just know ourselves so well.
Know all your demons.
We know all our demons. We know all of our mistakes. And it's almost as if you know someone that well, it's just kind of gross, you know?
That's how you see me, huh?
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about myself.
Yeah, I know. You know me pretty well.
I
mean, it's gross, but also beautiful, right?
But also beautiful. That's the thing. Yeah. Like, that's where I'm trying to like turn it around into compassion, because I think that the thing that happens is you're in this position of judging yourself all the time.
Mm.
and being and knowing what you aspire to be and knowing how you do not live up to that aspiration and like how constantly you're disappointing yourself. Like, can you imagine being around somebody who was just constantly disappointing you? Like, that would be like if your wife was constantly like you had an aspiration.
Go on,
of who
on
your
this
wife
totally
is.
Hypothetical story.
And just like disappointed you left and right, you'd fall out of love with that person, but it was because you weren't ever in love with that person in the first place. And I think that's the thing that I need to realize about myself is maybe I'm in love with a version of myself that doesn't exist. And instead, I need to be in love with the version of myself that does exist, knowing full well that it's not who I aspire to be. It's not my best ideal version of myself.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think where I'm landing on Valentine's Day is that the problem with Valentine's Day is that it's too narrowly focused on romantic love. And that we should broaden it out to embrace all forms of love, including
self-love. Or maybe we should have other love days.
Including platonic love.
Yeah, why don't we have a platonic love day?
It doesn't need its own day. Valentine's Day can be the day.
Really?
And rather than the people who aren't in relationships feeling judged or whatever for not having a date on Valentine's Day, you should embrace loving yourself. You should embrace loving your brother, loving your friend. Like, those forms of love are awesome, too.
And but can you imagine going on a date with your brother instead of your wife on Valentine's Day?
Actually, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I traditionally don't like doing romantic things on Valentine's Day. Maybe it's the perfect time to like have a bro day and just be like, you know what, Kyle, I love you, man. Like, you're a great brother. Like, I love you. Legit.
Let's frolic in some fields together.
Yeah, well, you know, or play video games.
Frolic in some video, some digital version of a field. Yeah, okay. You know what? If you asked me, can I spend Valentine's Day with my brother to have some, like, literal bromance? I'd be like, yeah, man, you do that.
Well, patrons, what do you think? Is Valentine's Day good? Is it whack? Does love at first sight exist? Is it only in old folks' homes? Does love disappear? Does it fluctuate? Do you love yourself?
Not to put you on the spot there. Do you love yourself?
Was that a heavy question?
It was a heavy question.
Well, if you've stuck with us this long, you know that we don't shy away from the heavy questions.
That's true.
We appreciate you.
Thanks for your love, man.
Because you also don't shy away from the heavy questions. And yeah, thanks for loving our show.
Yeah.
And loving the community and the vibe and everything we're striving to create here. You're integral to that whole process. We love you.
Love you.
In the Labyrinths podcast system, the listener is serenaded by two separate but equally important hosts, Amanda Knox, who brings authenticity and empathy, and Christopher Robinson, who brings intellectual curiosity. These are their stories.
What do you think, Knox?
Looks like a podcast junkie, shot up with one too many ads.
Should have become a patron from the looks of it.
Who wouldn't prefer ad-free episodes and signed books and live video hangouts over overdosing on ads in an alleyway?
Don't patronize me, Knox. Leave that to the listener.
Visit patreon.com/KnoxRobinson.